Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates from Living Compassion. It's my pleasure to be joined tonight by Penny from Murphy's, California. Welcome, Penny.
Hi, Michael.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Great. Great. It's great to have you on the air tonight.
Thank you.
Penny, tell us about peace practices.
Well, I'm actually very glad to have this opportunity to talk about the monthly peace practice. I don't know that everyone knows that on our website, every month there is a new peace practice. And the inspiration for those, Michael, came from, people may remember that a number of years ago, Sherry Huber was in Assisi, and she had a vision of an international center for peace, a place where people could come from all over the world and have the experience of peace and learn about efforts for peace and people of peace. And as time went on, we, I think, became clear that probably that wasn't going to happen in Assisi, but that we really have a peace center right here at the monastery in Murphy's.
Yeah, right
and,
under our nose.
And in fact, at that time, we renamed the monastery from the Zen Monastery Practice Center to the Zen Monastery Peace Center to really make a point of the fact that peace is at the heart of all we do.
Yes, yes, indeed.
And so we've been looking at ways that we can do the kinds of things here that we had in mind for Assisi. And part of what the vision of Assisi was to really give people the opportunity to practice and experience peace. And so one of the things that we've instituted over the last year or so is every month on our website we introduce a peace practice that people can read about at the beginning of the month and then are encouraged to do for the whole month.
Great. Great. And what is up for February?
Well, February, this is very fun. We tell a story in the February peace practice about a young woman, a young girl who was turning 10 years old. And some neighbors, some older people who are neighbors, wanted to do something kind of special for her birthday. And so they had the idea that they would make a list of 10 things that they really appreciated about her. And they made it in the form of a mobile. So just really hanging off a hanger, they put pieces of paper, and the pieces said all the things that they appreciated about her. You know, she's a great neighbor, she's a good athlete, she has a great sense of humor, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And the little girl appreciated it, and it turns out, this the story goes on, that apparently she asked her father to post the mobile on her bedroom door so that when she went to bed at night, she could read through all those things that people appreciated about her every night. It's a little bit, reminds you of kinds of the things we are doing with the practice everywhere, you know, these ways of just taking a moment to experience the experience of being appreciated.
Yes, yes. And don't we all need that?
Oh, brother, don't we? Yeah.
Yes.
And it's fun, you know. I'm thinking that this seems so consistent with practice everywhere because for those people who are receiving the little bulletins on as tweets or on Facebook, you know, many of them really point to that, to take a moment and just appreciate your life and appreciate who you are.
Yes. The place I go to is appreciating the person who's going around doing the best he can,
yep,
making the best effort that he knows how to make.
Yep.
In spite of all these messages that he's getting inside about he's not appreciated, he's worthless, there's something wrong with him, all of that.
Yeah, yeah. And so this month is February. It's Valentine's month. And so the inspiration arose to tell that story about how that girl's birthday was celebrated and to suggest to people that one option for Valentine's Day besides candy or flowers or that kind of thing, is actually to think about people we'd like to give Valentine's to, and perhaps to do that, to on a card or in some form, to just identify things that you really appreciate about them and present them on Valentine's Day as a really very special gift. And my own experience in playing with this is that if I think about people I really care about, boy, it is not hard to come up with a long list.
Yes.
And in addition to being a very nice gift for the other person, it's a very sweet experience for you when you're doing it.
Yes. Projection being our friend.
That's right. Projection being our friend. And then the final piece of the peace practice is that whoever else you may choose to do this for, do this for yourself as well. Sit down and design a card for yourself or a gift for yourself and just start writing down the things you really appreciate about you and present that to yourself and then post it. Put it someplace where every day, just like the little girl going to bed every night and seeing that, where every day you get a chance to remember what it is, each of us gets a chance to remember what it is that we really appreciate and value about ourselves.
Yes, indeed. And one of the many things I loved about that peace practice is it wasn't that you said, you know, write two or three things you appreciate about yourself. You said write 50 or 75 or 100. Huh?
Yeah. Well, you know, as I say, in my own experience, when I really sit down and think about someone I love and appreciate, including myself, once you get going, you know, you get on a roll, and it's really very easy to think about lots of things that you just appreciate. And it can be anything from, you know, you're a generous person to, you know, you make great strudel. You know, it can be, I love the socks you wear. You know, it can be that
yes.
kind of thing, too, just anything. And so it can be very fun and playful in doing it and receiving it.
Yes. And my experience is just like yours in that once I can get to that state of mind, that frame of mind where I'm open to appreciation, that it just comes and comes and comes.
Yeah, it just flows.
Yes.
Yeah. I like your term state of mind. I mean, it really is, you know, choosing to be in a place where we're open to feeling that and experiencing that, and just that alone is worth the exercise, you know?
Yes.
To just be put ourselves in that place.
Yes, yes. And I was thinking as you were talking, that appreciative state of mind is really sort of equal opportunity appreciative. So it's in that place, it's really easy for me to appreciate other people. It's easy for me to appreciate myself
yep.
and appreciate life generally.
Yeah, yeah. You know, as you say that, it occurs to me it'd be very fun to do that exercise about anything, you know, things I appreciate about, you know, where I live or things that I appreciate about where I work. Or I mean, it is choosing kind of to put ourselves in a place where appreciation is the experience we're having.
Yes, yes. And that's a great place to put ourselves.
Mm.
And it reminds me of a lot of exercises that I've done in practice about making a list of all the things that I'm grateful for.
Yeah, yeah. And again, if the experience itself of doing that is worth it, even if somehow, you know, the list blew away in the first wind, you have it. And
yes.
you have, ultimately, is just that experience of being someone appreciating.
Yes, yes. And the way you said that, it's the process of doing that, not the particular result of having the list.
That's right. It's the process of doing that. And the nice thing about doing a list or giving a card or, you know, receiving this, doing this for ourselves and others and receiving it is that seeing it is a reminder to keep coming back to that place.
Yes.
And yes, it's really fun to read those appreciations again and have that experience, but also it's just a kind of, it's just, again, like practice everywhere. It's a call to return to that place where we are in appreciation and life is a very good place to be in those moments.
Yes, 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 indeed. And my experience with practice everywhere and basically with all of practice is that it's pushing me, pulling me, inviting me to come to that place.
Yeah, yeah. And this is really a way of doing the same kind of thing and doing it for ourselves, which is really, it's a very powerful. It's a wonderful thing to get those reminders all day long and from someone else, but it's also a great thing to actually take the time to do that for ourselves.
Yes, yes, yes. My experience, definitely. And as you're talking, what it reminds me is that it's accepted to some degree to appreciate other people in our lives.
Yeah, right.
Sort of culturally speaking.
Yeah.
But for me to appreciate myself and, you know, make a big long list, to me, culturally, that seems like a big no-no.
Yeah, it's such a great way to drive ego, just berserk. You know?
Yes.
We're so not supposed to do that.
Yes.
So again, that in itself is a good reason to do it.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Penny, this has been really enjoyable.
Thank you, Michael.
Thanks for joining us.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye. Good evening, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good evening, Sherry.
Good evening, Michael.
How are you?
Good. I really appreciate the two of you.
Great. Thank you.
I appreciate that conversation.
Thank you.
Yeah, those were some really good reminders and encouragements and things like that. And as the point, I think, was made, we can't have too many of those.
We cannot have too many of those. Isn't that the truth?
And so you are doing well?
I am doing well. I'm doing great. I'm happy to be alive. And I almost said good afternoon. You know, the light is a little bit lighter these days.
I know. Isn't it exciting?
Yeah.
And I don't know about where you are, but where we are, the sun actually came out today.
Yes. Yes,
yeah.
It's out here right now.
Yeah, so pretty darn excited about that.
Yes. And we're still getting some water for the reservoirs, so that's
exactly
good too.
It's good for everybody.
Good for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Sherry, I have a couple of reminders here.
All right.
The ever-popular at-home working meditation retreat is coming your way again on Saturday, February 20th.
Ah.
You can register on the website.
Those are popular, goodness knows.
They are popular.
Mm-hmm.
Also, coming up on Saturday, March 6th, there will be a guidance day for Modos.
Wow.
And
what's a Modo?
Modo is our affectionate term for monthly donors.
Aha. Uh-huh. So that's everybody who is doing the equivalent of some sort of tithing?
Yes. Yes. And for me, speaking as a Modo, it's really great to make that commitment and know that it's going to happen automatically. And for me, it's like pulling a piece of foundation out from under conditioning about how I'm not participating and too cheap and all that stuff.
Uh-huh. You guys, you're on a roll here with this dirty tricks on egocentric karmic conditioning. I'm very supportive of all of them, you know.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes, I know. And the last thing I wanted to mention is that on Tuesday, March 16th, you will be in San Francisco at the First Unitarian Universalist Church at 7 p.m. for a public talk.
I will, and I hope everybody in the area comes by so that we can talk.
Yes. In my experience, they're engaging, fun. You know, to me, they're an event. You know, it's something that I want to be at, and you don't know what's going to happen, and there's a lot of people, and it's really exciting.
Yeah, it's kind of Zen improv, isn't it? Or maybe that's redundant.
Yeah.
I guess Zen is improv, but
yeah.
There is that element of you just have no idea who's going to show up, who's going to put their hand up, what they're
yeah.
going to say, and where the conversation is going to go. So it can be very exciting.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
fun, because people are fun.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And the other good news is that we have several callers in the queue here.
All right. Well, let's talk to them then.
Okay. First caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hey, Sherry, it's Rebecca. Hi, Michael.
Hey, Rebecca.
Hey.
How are you?
Well, I enjoyed the good news update, too. I was just thinking about what I was going to get my kids for Valentine's Day, and I think a list of things I love about them is a great idea.
I think that's better than chocolate, right?
Yes.
Even though I understand if it's dark chocolate and you also give them a bottle of red wine, according to the medical experts, that's now very good for your heart.
That is such good news, isn't it?
Isn't that what everybody's been waiting for? And but I agree. I think If I had gotten from my mother a list of things that she appreciated most about me, I would have been ecstatic.
Oh yeah, boy, doesn't that just make it? So I wanted to do two things. One, I want to report in on something, and one, I want to talk about the key reading for this week that I had an interesting reaction to. So my report in is about the karma around the this relationship that I've been kind of working with and ending, that ended a year ago. It's been a year ago now that this relationship ended. The last time I talked to you, I was just in the throes of this. It had circled back again, and I was not at all happy that it had circled back again, and it was in a really painful place. And that was, I don't know, maybe a couple of months ago. And it circled back again today, or yesterday, actually. And I just want to report that the intensity and the pain is definitely less each time it comes around.
Aha. Uh-huh. And what do you attribute that to?
I attribute it to awareness burning off the karma, and that the story is just not near as seductive, and therefore I'm not giving it my attention as much, or my energy or something. And so, I mean, I guess in some way that's what the pain, those the source of the pain was the believing the story. And when
right.
That's not there.
Yeah, so I would project that what happened before is that you would abandon whoever you is would abandon whoever you is.
Yeah.
So there would just be giving all of the attention and awareness to this very sad story.
Yeah.
And so the natural result, of course, is somebody is very sad. And
yeah,
the way that kind of thing usually goes, there's that thing that we go back to with all kinds of content. You know, you hear a song, or there's a phrase, or whatever it is, it takes you right back to that relationship and the experience of loss and that sort of thing. And there's that stab of pain and like that. The story, of course, can drag it out and make it a misery for way longer than that stab of pain.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So before, you would go with the story, and then it moves from a stab of pain to torture, to real misery, where somebody is recounting all of the wonderful things and everything that you've lost and what's wrong with you that it didn't work and, you know, all of the standard stuff. And now what you do is not abandon yourself. When it's you're at that juncture, you could bail out on you and go with the story, but you're not doing that. You're staying with you.
Yeah, I am. And I'm giving myself these supports, and the practice is giving me the support and assistance too, and making sure that abandonment doesn't happen. This time it was a dream that triggered it, like you're talking about a song or a memory. This was a dream, and I woke up, and just a couple of days prior, I had put a big banner on the wall that I always see when I first wake up, and it said, "Are you waking up into the voices? Drop them and breathe," because I had noticed that I'd been doing that a lot lately. And so that was the first thing I saw when I woke up that morning. And the dream was still real fresh, so it was like the sadness was there and the poster was there.
Yeah.
And it just helped me remember that was a story.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's excellent, isn't it? Because there's the dream. You have no control over that. You know,
yeah.
That's just something that happens. And yet you arranged your life such that you were right there to catch that person when she started to tip over into a world of suffering.
Yeah. Oh, that is just so sweet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And Well, that may be a.
May I add something to that?
Sure.
We're in this email class now.
Uh-huh.
And so it's the bizarre tapestry of misinformation that you have always believed was you, and then it's the movie. And in as people look at their movies, so many of the stories are their dramas. They're it's about somebody, a really good person who's trying really hard, and they can never be good enough. They can never be successful. They never get the love.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I thought as I'm reading these, I'm thinking, good grief. We could make a list of Hollywood movies that have that as a theme, right? And, you know, I mean, it would go on forever because it's the human story. So there's that person who wakes up out of that dream, and the what we're meant to believe is that the love she's seeking is from someone else who is unavailable. Therefore, love is not possible for her.
Yeah.
But the love she really wants, the unconditional love and acceptance that is available to her, comes via you when you go to that centered place where you are in a non-separate reality and living in a place of abundance and joy and connection and satisfaction. Everything that we are looking for is available to us in each moment that we are actually here.
Hmm.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. So then egocentric karmic conditioning has conned people into believing that we have to leave that place of unconditional love and acceptance to go out and try to get it from somebody else who is, we're pretty sure, given a lifetime of experience, unable to give us that, even if they desperately want to.
Because they're doing the same process.
Exactly. And because the only way we can find that satisfaction is to come back to our authentic self. And each one of us is required to do that. Now, once we do that, we're freed up to love anybody we want, do anything we want, go anywhere we want. That's great, because we no longer believe that out there in another person, in another circumstance, at another time, something is going to happen to us or for us that is going to cause us to be satisfied, because we're already satisfied.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, as you're saying that, what I'm seeing, too, is that just like that love and getting the relationship of your dreams is part of a piece of content, I see it, too, in creating the world. Like, we got to fix these problems. We got to, you know, that is exactly the same process. You know, in the kind of the societal level that we're doing.
Yes. And so each one of us leaves what we're looking for, abandons it in order to go out there and change or fix something so that we will finally be able to get what we want from the world, from other people, from a career, from money, from whatever it is. And of course, it never works. You know, what's possible for us, I don't think it's going to happen right away. But if we would just all turn around and race back to center.
Yeah. If we would take, it seems like, you know, how you one of your quotes has been, if we just had the courage to stop beating, to stop the beatings for 1 second, then we would, you know, we would see that we are. Well, then the same could kind of be applied to society. If we just stopped for 1 second trying to fix everything, then maybe we could, in assuming that something's wrong with the world or with the school system or with the society or with kids today or whatever it is that we have a thing going about, then we might fall into that place, you know, that.
Yeah, we might not fall into it as a group, but one at a time we can fall into it.
Yeah, yeah.
We could hit critical mass, you never know.
Well, see, I was in this little sadness. Like, I want us to fall into it as a group, or I want at least enough of us to fall into it to where we can, you know, and that's really, I think, what's happening in Africa, you know, with the Africa work, is that that's building at that kind of exactly the thing that we're talking about.
I think so, too. Yeah, I think
so. It's so fun.
Yeah.
Well, and that's why when I...
It's what we love about Sangha.
Yes, it is.
Sorry, I interrupted you. What were you saying?
Oh, I was just going to say, and that's what I was reading the key on Sunday with my key group, my group of one, and so I was self-facilitating, and it was the first sentence was, "Don't waste your time trying to change anything."
Uh-huh.
There was a part of me that was able, since I was facilitating myself and doing the two chairs thing, I was able to see that come out, like, well, you know, what do you mean? Don't waste your time, you know, and just kind of went off in that direction.
Uh-huh.
And then eventually it came back to, who are some of the role models that I can project were not really interested in changing things, you know, that sentence was really pointing to. And, of course, Gandhi came to mind. And Jesus, you know, I can project that Jesus did not think anything was wrong. You know, he was just too much of a party guy and a happy guy, you know, you can read and, you know, things to think that he lived in a frame of mind like the world is terribly wrong. And so it was just kind of, I kind of worked through that to get back to, again, the place of nothing's wrong.
Yeah. And again, I think what we're, you know, all of this is pointing at the same thing, right? If we leave well-being, if we leave nothing wrong, in order to go out and change or fix something, the big waste of time and energy is that's something wrong that I'm seeing out there is being projected from inside me. So the
yeah.
only place it's ever going to be fixed or changed, if that's what we're going for, is inside me.
Yeah, yeah. So again, the work is really all about the exploring all of those parts, those selves that have that belief, and really kind of just...
And accepting them.
Yeah, and accepting
That's
them.
That's the tricky part.
That was the second half of that page, drawing the circle of acceptance around them all.
Yeah,
so.
That book.
Yeah, I know. What do you do? Well, anyway, that's what I wanted to say, and I really appreciate opportunity. I love this conversation. It's just one of my favorite topics.
Good. Well, thank you for bringing it up, because it in my experience, it's one of the great stumbling blocks for all of us. You know, really getting it that there isn't any out there. There isn't anyone else. It's just so counter to our conditioning that takes a lot to actually be able to kind of hang on to that notion.
Well, thanks, and y'all have a good night.
Thank you. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Rebecca. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, I was just thinking about your last comment there. When I get it that it's all projection, it feels like it frees me up in a sense, because I know where the work is.
Yes. Yes. And I can do something with that.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. If it's out there, if it's them, if it's that, if it's whatever, yeah, I'm really kind of sunk, because
yes.
I obviously can't have a whole lot of influence about that.
Yes. Though I may try desperately.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
And you know, the other thing that it makes me think of that I often have trouble remembering is that I don't know, first of all, I don't know what's going on. Second, I don't know where anybody is. I don't know, where an individual is on their path to awakening and ending suffering.
Yeah.
So I can project that, whew, you know, they've just got a glimmer that there might be a path.
Right.
But I don't know that, you know, they could be crossing the finishing line while I'm standing back there going, well, what's the matter with that person? So just to remember that I, much as my conditioned mind would like to convince me otherwise, I actually don't have the whole picture or the real truth.
Yes, that is a great reminder.
I hate that, but I accept it.
You hate it and you accept it as true.
Yeah, I'm afraid so.
Great, we're going to hear from our sponsors and then we'll be right back.
All right.
What would you do if you knew you could not fail? How free would you be? How deep would you love, dear? What would you hear if you listened to your beautiful heart?
This music by Trish Brooks for Culligan gives voice to what Simply Celebrate is all about. Opening to rivers of joy, listening to our hearts, trusting ourselves and our lives. Simply Celebrate is a book and business that grew out of gratitude for the work of Sherry Huber and this amazing Sangha. We use the practice as a foundation for helping people wake up to all the joy, spontaneity, color, and connection that is available in every moment. Please visit simplycelebrate.net.
Once you bathe in an ocean of roses, what if you swam in a river of joy?
Porchdog Software is proud to support Open Air with Sherry Huber. For more years than we care to mention, Porchdog has been writing Windows and Mac software for customers big and small. We're pretty good at what we do, and we always try to remember that what we're doing is never more important than how we're doing it. Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
Welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have more callers here.
All right.
Caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hello, Sherry and Michael. It's Chris.
Hey. How are you?
Well, I'm pretty good, really. It's been a interesting day. I've been having this thing in my head. It's
how do I put this? I have this job that is, I'm grateful to have it, and it's not particularly challenging or anything, and it makes enough money for us to do just fine. And yet it seems like there's other things I could do. And then I ended up today going into my head quite a bit about, and talking to my wife about this, that, and the other thing, and I don't even know what the question is. How do you go about kind of narrowing a focus if you want to move in a certain direction? And now the previous call was really good for this too. But I know I'm rambling here, but how can I put this? It's like I can see that there would be other things, more other times of jobs that might be more. You know, I could retire when I'm 60 if I'm being a mailman for my life, and yet I think there might be something more to it, to life, and more of a life's work behind. And yet, so far, this idea has not caused much in the way of anything other than suffering.
Uh-huh.
And then I just spent the, right before dinner just now, I was dancing with my youngest daughter and listening to the previous call, I spent the day kind of not in a real happy place, and now I'm in a happy place, and I can see that whatever job I have and is really not the point. And yet,
right. Well, so if I'm hearing you right, I think you just answered yourself.
Yes.
Yeah. Right. And yet, and the and yet is where. Awareness practice meets life, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So you know that that's true. I actually think about that with some regularity. That's not true. I was going to say I think I could do just about any job and be fine. But this last trip that I was on, I spent so much time in so many airports, and there are a ton of people around the world who sit in chairs in airports down at the end of hallways, you know, waiting for the random person to come through to show their passport or that sort of thing. And I think, I don't know about that. You know, it would be an incredible opportunity to meditate, and yet, you know, being in – well, anyway, you're right there with me. It would kind of be the equivalent for me of being all right in prison.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we do have some great spiritual examples of that, you know, of people who were put in prison and seemed to actually thrive in that environment,
mm-hmm.
because of what it called them to overcome in themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So there is that element to it, you know, that when we realize that, well, what I do is just what I do, and the voices that come up to resist that, the better ideas, the, you know, the suffering, the comparisons, the judgment, the self-talk, the, all of that, is probably going to be there no matter what I do.
Mm-hmm.
So how do I sort that out so that I am all right with whatever I do, and from that place look at making a choice about what I do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was trying to come up with a question yesterday on my reflective listening buddy call, and when they were the same topic more or less, and I said something which I was saying something like, you know, that I know that part of me knows that doing the practice more and more and more will be useful or beneficial to even coming up with an answer to any kind of, you know, decisions or not, you know, quote, decisions, unquote.
Mm-hmm.
And then, and then of course, there's always resistance to more of that. And then I said, well, I know there's really no reason not to practice. And it just, that particular sentence, it just struck me at the time. And there really is no reason not to practice.
Right. And if this is what you mean, that's the whole point of conditioned mind trying to take us into one of these places of dissatisfaction, because I can either be practicing being here with what actually is, or I can practice being in a conversation of dissatisfaction and suffering with egocentric karmic conditioning.
And that's what I was practicing today.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
And it's awful, isn't it? It's just,
oh,
it just
was.
Feels terrible.
And it's a day off, of course. It doesn't happen during a regular work day because I'm at work listening to open air.
Uh-huh.
Instead of doing this, that's and my job. The funny thing is, the thing about my job that I love, I'm a mailman, is that I leave work at work. It never comes home. It's zero stress. I can listen to the radio show, and you know, there's a lot of great advantages for that.
Yeah.
And I'm just grateful to have it in this particular time.
And do you interact with people?
Yeah, not as much as I used to, just because. But yes, it's harder. It doesn't happen as frequently when you have a driving route like I do. I used to have a walking route, and you're going up to everybody's front door every single day, and you get to know a lot more people. But I have relationships with people.
Uh huh.
And some good ones too.
Yeah. So you can go around and kind of be a little bodhisattva of mail delivering, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and it's really interesting, isn't it, that it would do that to you on a day off?
Oh, days off. I have traditionally struggled with days off, and we're working on it. We've made some progress, both my wife and I, because we, you know, we often have noticed it's be 3 in the afternoon on a Sunday. Oh, we haven't meditated today. How'd that happen? Because when I'm going to work, I get up at a specific time, and I go downstairs, and I have a meditation before I have breakfast. So, I mean, it's on my work days, it's extremely consistent. And it's today, we got it in today before the kids went to school, so that was fine, too. But.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's kind of a big tip-off, isn't it?
Which?
That what conditioning can do when you don't have that kind of schedule is get you not to do the things that support you and then start making inroads.
Oh, yes.
Uh-huh.
And my voice just said, well, I want to sleep in. It's my day off.
Uh-huh. As if the schedule can't all get bumped back to whatever.
Right, right. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And like I said, we've noticed that, and we have made some adjustment, and it's been, in the last month or two, it's been more consistent on days off, especially Sundays, than it has been in the past. So.
Uh-huh. Yeah, which could be part of what kicks conditioning up.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Up a notch.
And an email class kicks it up a notch.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. Okay, well, I can see that. You're paying way too much attention.
Way too much.
Yeah.
And my wife's going on the 30-day in April, so I'll have a 30-day at home.
Whoa.
I will work. I've arranged it so I go to work late, leave early, and so I can be with the kids before and after school. But that'll be an interesting experiment here.
Yes. Well, that's a rather heroic support for your partner there.
Uh-huh. Yes, it is. And she's going to do the same for me next year.
Excellent.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. Very good. All right. Well,
thank you very much.
Yes.
Oh, did I remember reading in something that you wrote not too long ago that you had found were looking for a solar-powered vibrating watch? Am I imagining that?
No, I actually secured one. Found me one.
I've been searching all over the internet, and I can find watches that beep that are solar powered, and watches that vibrate that have batteries.
I'll bet Alex is listening to us have this conversation, and I will ask him right now to send you that information. How about
okay.
that?
Okay. Thank you very much.
Very good. All right.
All righty.
Thanks. Take
You're
care.
Welcome.
Talk
Thanks.
To you in a few weeks.
Yes. Good night, Sherry. Good night, Michael.
Good night. Thanks for joining us. You're listening to Open Air. Sherry, I'm always inspired by people's willingness and courage.
Yes.
Oh,
whoops. Somebody forgot to hang up the phone. Yeah, because you're a parent.
Yes.
And, I mean, I haven't been in that position for a lot of years, and I got a little case of the whim-whams with the other half of the team taking off for a month.
Yes.
So that's amazing. I mean, it's incredibly courageous to arrange your life so that you have a month to devote to practice like that.
Yeah.
It really very much so when you have to negotiate the whole thing with a family.
Yeah.
And then to take on the whole family support and that sort of thing while your partner goes, that's great practicing together.
Great practice. Yes, indeed. And we have a couple more callers here.
Good.
Okay, next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hello?
Let's try that again. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself? You there?
Oh,
hello.
Hello.
Hi, Sherry Ann. Hi, Michael. This is Tracy.
Tracy?
Hi.
Hi.
How
I'm
are
so
ya?
Happy I got on.
Yeah.
I'm doing pretty well.
Are you calling with a report?
Well, I'm calling partially with a report and also partially with something that I'm running up against that So not as much of a report as to something that I'm running up against that makes me feel like I'm a character in the Blueberry Girl and Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, the one that kind of keeps taking things in, and then she's getting ready to explode.
I see.
Well, perhaps
we should address that first.
It feels like it's a little more explosive.
Uh-huh.
But what I'm running into is I've been dating this guy for a couple of months, and he has a tendency to go into stories. And what I'm finding is, you know, I think I'm a good listener, and, you know, kind of trying to reflect and listen, and then it just goes on and on and on, and I'm watching, like, my own energy build and build and build and build, and it feels like when you're just in a, like, back-and-forth conversation, like, there's a place for energy to go, and it's creative, and it just feels to me like there's nowhere to go, and he
pretty much never takes a breath.
Well, he'll kind of take a breath, but, you know, and then I'll try to engage, you know, to maybe engage it a little, or try to even get to where, like, what's really under the story, or who's the storyteller, you know, like, I'm curious about it. And then, you know, there is another aspect of me that feels like time starts slipping away, not even slipping away, but I feel like I'm starting to not even take care of myself very well in it, because one, I start feeling like full of energy that has nowhere to go inside, and then it also feels like just the act of listening is okay, and then, you know, it feels like if I'm giving it everything, then, you know, keeping integrity with the rest of the day or a schedule or other things that need to happen. So it's a tricky place, and he's also said to me, like, the most important thing to me is to be heard. And so it just feels like trying to navigate this turf as to what is kind for both of us, like not being unkind to me because I just want to give it all to him, and then not, yeah, I'm sure you know what I'm talking about.
I think I got a sense of it here. And so let me ask you this. So when you have these conversations, are you required to sort of sit there next to each other or in facing chairs and talk? I mean,
It's interesting. It happens a lot when, like, you know, we're having a meal, or seems a lot in the, you know, like in the morning time. And then I'll kind of think, oh, I need to transition to, like, doing dishes or cleaning up or starting something else. Like, it feels like if I can keep moving my energy in some way, it's a little easier. But just sitting there, for 30 minutes is okay. But when it starts, like, going into, like, a really long time, it feels like I'm taking in. It's like the tea kettle just that keeps filling up, and then we're
okay.
Spelled out.
Yeah. And so have you broached the subject of, would it be all right for you if I continue to listen but kind of red up the kitchen here while we're talking? Is he open to that?
He is open to that. And he is open. Recently I said, you know, I want to keep, you know, conscious of time because we said that we want to do X, Y, and Z today. You know, so I've become a little bit of the time manager too. And, you know, it feels like it's, you know, it's okay. And it just, like, it feels like there needs to be a person within me that is really trying to keep a big picture.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel like I'm being unkind. Well, I would say that it feels like I'm being kind in relationship to him, but then I'm wondering sometimes when I'm not, I guess if I'm not saying anything, then I'm not being kind in relationship to me.
Let me ask you this.
Okay.
Do you ever tell him about this, that you have a finite period of time that you can be all right just sitting still, and then the energy gets to be really uncomfortable and you need to move around and do other things?
Well, I did once. I kind of let it happen for a little too long because I just got really glazed over and said, I'm full right now. I can't take in any more information, any more stuff. Like, I need to kind of direct my attention somewhere else. And I actually went and worked for a while just to kind of focus on something different. and but it felt like I maybe let it go a little too long. So maybe just broaching the subject when it's not happening might be better.
Yeah, to just express what goes on with you. You know, and if it's going to be a big conversation, maybe you need to be going for a walk while it happens. Or, you know, it needs to be while you clean up the kitchen after dinner or, you know, whatever it is. But to let him know that you don't have the same capacity for sitting there and being in conversation like that that he does. Not that anybody's wrong about it, but, you know, he's comfortable with this. You're comfortable with this. Well, part of being together seems like it's figuring out how it can work for both of you.
Okay. So it's more of just that, you know, it sounds so easy. And, you know, it just sounds like just saying more of just this is what goes on for me. And I think some part of me is making it bigger, like, you know, making it bigger.
Yeah, that seems like the important thing to get to, whether there's a fear of hurting his feelings or upsetting him, or is it somebody who is trying to make a case that, you know, this guy is higher maintenance than I can stand? So, I mean, he's clearly, at least on the subjects you've covered so far, he is not a withholder.
No, and it just feels like there's like an aspect of himself, like he keeps telling stories around this one part of himself, and so it feels like there's something, and because I'm not him, I don't totally know, but there's something about, you know, this, you know, young person who was really wild that he just goes on and on about stories about, so it feels really important, and I don't know if I'm just not getting it because I'm not a boy, or there's... But it does feel like what I'm watching, how like different aspects maybe just need to be heard in different ways, and maybe if I don't really relate to an aspect because I don't have it so much in me, does it? Because I see that there's a difference between just reflecting, you know, and really just being and holding the space, and then sometimes I wonder if it goes on because I'm not relating, or if it doesn't even really matter.
And now, what would be the risk in saying, I see something along the lines of, I see a pattern here, and so why are you telling me all these stories?
Yeah. The only risk is, like, having the risk is just... like I started saying something, he kept going on in another direction in relationship to his house, and I said something in regards to, you know, there's something about, you know, the concrete and da 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 da, and he got really defensive, just like taking it so personally that I was even curious about something, and so I bring that to it, just this sensitivity around somebody not being that involved in the practice and how quickly it goes to, oh, she's saying something, that means there's something wrong with me. So trying to just be really like kind and really in integrity with what's going on with me at the same time.
Yeah. So may I project?
Yes.
Yeah. So not wanting to, let's see, this is a projection. That very often in relationship, we can be really careful about not upsetting the other person until we get upset enough that we don't really care whether or not we're upsetting the other person. You know that one?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So that might be a important place to look. You know, that you would risk being straightforward with him now rather than booting him out the door later on, and him kind of not knowing what happened to him.
Gotcha. Yeah. So just like being just really forthcoming and just saying, this is
what goes on for me, it
doesn't mean there's anything wrong with you.
That's right. And it's not even that these stories aren't interesting. I'm just curious what this is in aid of. You know, it seems like there's something, another conversation that we're having or could be having or something. So who is this, you know, who is this guy and that you keep telling me about? And I mean, is clearly he's got lots of exploits here, but, you know, okay, what's behind it? And
if
he gets really angry and defensive, well, that'll be a different kind of conversation and possibly one you can feel more engaged in.
I actually probably would feel more engaged in that one because it would be
you'd be a part of it.
It'd be a part of it. Yeah, and it's funny because even, you know, I have a, you know, growing up, my dad would just go on and on and on and on, and then I'd go to this, you know, this story and check out about how he doesn't care and blah, blah, blah. And I'm, you know, so not going there, but there is a reminiscent thing about someone who needs to really fill up all the space with their stories instead of, like, really connecting.
Mm.
And it's just not a place that I want to, like, hang out in for a long time.
Well, certainly it has a feel of karma to it just from that connection. And so certainly it's something you would want to approach and handle in a different way.
Yeah.
You don't want to be that girl growing up. You know, you don't want to be replaying that piece of karma.
No, no. And when it feels like I'm not replaying the karma because she's not doing the relationship. You know, I'm aware of that, you know, that little pull there. It's like, okay, nope, not going there. And then I think it comes, like Rebecca referred to that key thing last night and the reading, and it was saying, you know, basically draw a circle of acceptance around anything, about everything, because it is, you know, that's just what it is, and da-da-da. And then the very last line, it said, until you see how you're doing it. And then what came up for me, you know, in reading that was, you know, until, you know, I see how I'm doing it, where, like, what's, you know, when is it really in benefit of this whole being, you know, with her heart? Like, when is this type of relationship, or this type of relationship, is it, you know, good for all, or is it just karma working some stuff out? And, you know, it feels like I'm in, I'm showing up, I'm learning a whole bunch. And I guess I just only need to be responsible to, I don't know, it just feels like, you know, do I want to keep doing something that doesn't feel really in support of all, or is it just seeing it and not falling into that place and staying in integrity with myself that you work right through it?
Yes, and again, my strongest intuition that it's a great opportunity to be different about it.
To be different, yeah.
Not just to, you know, the tendency would be to say, this doesn't really work for all of me. I need a different relationship.
Sure,
And yet, probably there's a good chance that moving forward into it, actually addressing it, would produce more clarity for you than going and finding this same karma in a different person.
Gotcha. So, like, moving forward even more into it and just using my voice some more in a kind way, that's burning through the karma.
Yeah, and not in a mean, obviously, unkind way, but just in a really straightforward way. You know, there are two people in this relationship. So he's got his karma and what he brings to it, and you've got yours and what you bring to it, you know, both players can be there because he picked you just as surely as you picked him.
For better or for worse.
Right, that's right.
It's just that happy, blessed opportunity comes up over and over.
Over and over again. Yeah, we just have that radar for our imago matches.
Oh, gosh. Well, that was so helpful. So there's, like, no magic wand other than just being really, trying to just be really straightforward and just saying this is what goes on with this human being, and there's nothing wrong with, you know, any of it, but just
Let's work on this together.
Yeah, okay. I can do that, and I will report in.
Excellent. Now you got two reports next time. Or something
yes.
new. Who knows?
Or something new. Oh, gosh. Good. Well, thanks, Sherry. Thanks, Michael.
You're most welcome. Good night.
Okay. Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Tracy. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, let's stop, drop, and breathe for a moment.
Let's do that.
And we'll be right back.
All right.
If you suddenly find yourself believing the voices in your head, don't panic. Just remember these three easy steps. Stop, drop, and breathe. That sequence again is stop, drop, and breathe. This public service announcement is brought to you by Voice Busters Incorporated, purveyors of the finest practice tools and reminders since 2008. Visit us on the World Wide Web at thevoicescartoons.org.
Stop, drop, and breathe. Stop, drop, and breathe.
Sherry, we have 9 minutes left, and we have two callers in the queue here.
Right.
Okay, next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hello?
Hello? Hello? Hello?
Hello? Caller, are you there?
Boy, it sounded like it for a second, didn't it?
Yes. Yes. Caller, are you there?
Hello?
Hey.
Sherry?
Yes.
This is Beth.
Hey, Beth. Ah, you made it.
From the East Coast.
Yes.
We are experiencing weather.
Yes. I had heard
deep
that
weather.
Rumor. Amazing
weather. This is the
weather.
Fourth day. Yes. Snowed in. Kind of can't get my car out.
4 days.
4 days. Seen a huge amount of, I've always, you know, it's like having to be home for 4 days.
Uh-huh.
And it's like how much of my life I don't spend in my own space. My space is for sleeping, eating, and then going out and living my life
uh-huh.
elsewhere.
Uh-huh. So you don't have you don't experience it as a home.
Yeah, it's not home anymore. But that's not what I want to look at. It's the outer controlness that the city as a whole has been experiencing that I've been projecting out and kind of running into with people.
Can you say more about that? You mean just that the weather makes people so aware of how little control we have?
Yeah, I mean, there's no control. This storm was beyond the city's capacity. So,
well, there's no control even when there isn't a storm, Beth.
Right.
Let's face it.
Right. So there's a lot of stories coming up. You know, it's like 3 jobs in the last 3 days have canceled, so I'm not having money coming in. So I'm going to not be able to pay my bills.
Uh-huh.
Those kind of voices.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, space for making bread. So there have been like these...
That's great.
And, you know, it's just kind of like, you know, here I am, you know, I'm not sure if I'm going to get a call in the morning saying don't come. So I don't know in the morning if when I wake up if I'm going to go to work or not.
Uh-huh.
Which kind of feeds both sides. The one side of the panic of not being able to pay my bills, no money coming in, and on the other side, when I was at the monastery, we did a sesshin, which was 13 hours of meditation for 8 days in a row.
Mm-hmm.
That was the closest to this experience. Just kind of like, I mean, I'm moving around more than I did on this machine. But it's like continually running into the boundaries of my life and the fact of,
is it,
you know,
is, let me ask you this. Are you running into the boundaries of your life, or are you running into the boundaries of what you think of as yourself?
Yeah. Yeah. Because I'm yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So you're running into, let's if we extend that a little bit, running into the edges of what ego can keep together.
Yeah, I think I keep getting to that point,
mm-hmm.
and then kind of swinging to the other side, getting involved in a project. I've run out of things to watch. I've run out of my addictions.
Mm-hmm.
In, you know, the library is closed, and I haven't gotten mail since Friday.
mm-hmm.
So
yeah. So it really, you know, I know people find it very annoying when I get excited about things like this, but it these are the experiences that help us to see that egocentric karmic conditioning, in fact, cannot make our life work. It makes us miserable as we pursue the belief that it's going to make our lives work. And then when
I didn't get that. I almost did.
Okay.
I almost heard it.
Okay. So there's egocentric karmic conditioning running the show.
Yep.
Making you believe that it's just right, just seconds away from delivering the perfect life to you. You know, most things don't work, but hey, it's got a plan.
Yeah, there's hope.
There's hope. Yeah. And so there it is with these promises. Now, you know, because you hang around with people like me and other people on these calls and that sort of thing, you know that that we're making a case for, you're just treading water. It cannot deliver. It doesn't deliver. It won't deliver. It can't deliver. It's never going to provide for you what you want. Its real motivation is to provide for you a maximum amount of suffering and dissatisfaction. That's the name of the game. That's the way it's set
up.
Yep. And yet, like most conditioned humans, you know, you can be talked into falling for it again.
Again and yet again.
I didn't want to say that. It can sound so negative. And so now, here you are in a position where it is crystal clear that egocentric karmic conditioning cannot do anything for you. Right? And you are left with not a lot.
The same practice of figuring out what is ego karmic conditioning.
Well, that would give it something to focus on.
Yeah, it didn't come out clear what I meant.
What you get,
and it's gone.
What you get to see in this is, as we said earlier, you know, the edges where what you have believed, egocentric karmic conditioning, what you have believed it could do for you, how it was serving you in your life, you get to see it just fall apart.
It is, yes. And then
it's
coming back.
Sounds like a whole city of them falling apart.
Yes. Yes. And finding new muscles to kind of deal with it because, you know, where I live is not going to get plowed. I mean, they're barely plowing, you know, the main arteries, let alone alleyways. But and it's kind of like, you know, wow. There's like this half-formed seeing, and the words just aren't matching it.
Give it a shot and clean them up afterwards.
Something Melinda, I talked to Melinda a couple of weeks ago, and one of the things she kind of just kind of half said was, you know, afraid of the human emotions. That I have a terror of being human. And I've been kind of seeing that coming up again and yet again, and that there's this emotional response. I get afraid of it, and then either within internally when I'm in this house alone or externally when I'm out shoveling snow and dealing with neighbors and so forth, that, you know, it's like as soon as there's any emotion, I'm gone. Whether it's my emotion or somebody else's.
And so you're just starting to see that that's a common thread in this.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, and it's also kind of a major portion of what keeps the ego, the karma going.
Yeah. And so here you are. It sounds like from, you know, the way you started out the conversation, that your life is pretty devoted to escaping.
Oh. Yes.
Yeah. And now you're trapped.
And now I'm trapped.
And there's all this emotion. And there's nowhere
yes.
to go.
And there's, yes. Yes, I have gotten to the end of all my addictions. Momentarily
escape.
Knowing that I'm not, yeah. And I'm still in the house.
Exactly. And it sounds like not likely to go anywhere for a while.
And it's like in keeping, in choosing the, you know, just beginning to see how I choose escapism again and yet again. It's like when I'm not escaping, these things that I've been escaping from have been coming up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And there's no place in my conditioning that's comfortable with that.
No. No. And do you have a sense that the lack of comfort is just it is simply a way to get the maximum amount of suffering out of this situation?
Yes. I have been seeing how my pursuit of comfort has kept conditioning alive and well.
Yep. Yep. So, you know, now you sat through an 8-day session. So you pretty much proved to yourself that you can do anything. Yeah. So here's my best encouragement. This is a session. Okay? Stop, give up all hope of escape. Okay? You can't escape, and neither can egocentric karmic conditioning. So duke it out. Now, I see,
okay.
I see by the clock on the wall that we are out of time. So, which is extremely regrettable because, let me ask you this question. Do you have a sense of how to do that?
Stop comforting myself.
That would be good. Stop comforting yourself in an escape.
With compassion.
That's right. Comfort yourself in a way that really works. Be kind to yourself.
Not self-hatred's form of comfort.
That's right.
Or it's not comforting.
That's right. You got it. From the heart. Sympathy, understanding, kindness, support, caring, listening, being with, embracing, accepting, allowing,
breaking open.
Yeah. Yeah. Being with the one who has been held captive behind this stuff for a lifetime. She's not afraid.
At least one.
Huh? Yeah.
At least one.
Yeah. She's not afraid. She's been waiting for you.
No matter what the life circumstances are.
Exactly. What's don't count.
Thank you, Sherry.
You are very welcome. Take very good care of yourself. All right? The authentic Beth. Finder and lover.
Yes.
And stay warm.
That I got down.
Okay. Let us know how it goes.
Thank you, Sherry.
Thank you. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Beth. You've been listening to another great edition of Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Thanks for hanging in there, Michael.
Oh, my pleasure and privilege. And we have one caller, and I'm going to invite them to call us back early next week.
Yeah. Yeah, early.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And
you take care.
I was just going to say, it's a big show. It takes all of us, and I'm grateful for everyone's part.
Me too. Me too. Thanks to everybody.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night.